Chapter 1, Arjuna's Despair.
On the field of Dharma, the field of Kuru, gathered together and eager to fight, what did my sons and the sons of Pandu do, Sanjaya?
Having seen the army of the Pandavas arrayed for battle, King Duryodhana approached his teacher Drona and spoke these words. Behold, teacher, this great army of the sons of Pandu, arrayed by your own pupil, the wise son of Drupada. Here are heroes, great archers, equal in battle to Bhima and Arjuna. Duryodhana, Virata, and Drupada, the great warrior, Drishtaketu, Chaketana, and the valiant king of Kashi, Purujit, Kuntibhoja, and Shabya, a bull among men, the mighty Yudhimanyu, and the valiant Uttamajas, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi, all of them great warriors. But know also, best of the twice-born, those distinguished among us. I name to you the leaders of my army, so that you may recognize them. Yourself and Bhishma and Karna and Kripa, ever victorious in battle. Ashvatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Samadatta. And many other heroes, ready to give up their lives for my sake, armed with many kinds of weapons, all skilled in war. Our army, guarded by Bhishma, is unlimited, while theirs, guarded by Bhima, is limited. Therefore, standing each in his own place at every point of entry, all of you must guard Bhishma alone. Then the aged Kuru elder, the grandsire, roaring a lion's roar to gladden Duryodhana's heart, blew his conch loudly, mighty in valor. Then conches and kettle drums, cymbals, drums, and horns were sounded all at once. The sound was tumultuous. Then, standing in their great chariot yoked with white horses, Krishna and Arjuna blew their divine conches. Hrishaksha blew the Panchajanya, Dhananjaya blew the Devadatta, and Bhima, of fearsome deeds, blew his great conch Pandra. King Yudhishthira, son of Kunti, blew the Anantavijaya. Nakula and Sahadeva blew the Saghosha and the Manipushpaka. The king of Kashi, supreme archer and Shikhandi, the great warrior, Drishtadyumna, Virata, and the unconquered Satyaki, Drupada and the sons of Draupadi, O Lord of the Earth, and the mighty-armed son of Subhadra, all blew their conches, each his own. That tumultuous sound tore at the hearts of Dhritarashtra's sons, echoing through the sky and the earth. Then, seeing Dhritarashtra's sons drawn up in position as the flying of weapons was about to begin, Arjuna, whose banner bore the monkey, the son of Pandu, took up his bow and spoke these words to Hrishaksha, lord of the earth.
Place my chariot, Achyuta, between the two armies, so that I may look upon those arrayed here, eager for battle, with whom I must fight in this coming struggle of war. I wish to see those who are gathered here ready to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra in this war.
Thus addressed by Gyudaksha, O descendant of Bharata, Hrishaksha placed that finest of chariots between the two armies, before Bhishma and Drona and all the rulers of the earth, and said, Behold, Partha, these Kurush gathered together. Their Partha saw standing before him fathers and grandfathers, teachers, uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, and friends, fathers-in-law and companions too, in both armies. Seeing all these kinsmen standing arrayed, the son of Kunti, overcome by deep compassion, spoke these sorrowful words.
Seeing my own people here, Krishna, drawn up eager to fight, my limbs give way and my mouth goes dry. There is trembling in my body and my hair stands on end. The bow Gandiva slips from my hand and my skin is burning. I cannot stand still, my mind seems to whirl, and I see omens that bode ill, Keshava. I foresee no good to come from killing my own people in battle. I have no desire for victory, Krishna, nor for kingship, nor for pleasures. What use is kingship to us, Govinda? What use are enjoyments or life itself, when those for whose sake we desired kingship, enjoyments, and pleasures stand here in battle, having given up their lives and their wealth? Teachers, fathers, sons, and grandfathers too, uncles, fathers-in-law, grandsons, brothers-in-law, and other kinsmen. These I do not wish to kill. Even though they would kill me, Madhusudana, not even for the sake of dominion over the three worlds, let alone for the earth. What joy would we gain from killing Dhritarashtra's sons, Janardana? Only evil would fall upon us if we killed these men, even though they are the aggressors. Therefore we ought not to kill Dhritarashtra's sons, our own kinsmen. For how could we be happy, Madhava, after killing our own people, even if these men, their minds overcome by greed, see no wrong in destroying a family or committing treachery against friends? Why should we not know enough to turn back from this evil, Janardana? We who see clearly the wrong done in destroying a family. When a family is destroyed, its eternal traditions perish. When tradition is lost, lawlessness overtakes the whole family. When lawlessness prevails, Krishna, the women of the family are corrupted. And when women are corrupted, O descendant of Vrishni, the mingling of castes arises. Such mingling drags the destroyers of the family, and the family itself, down to ruin. Their ancestors fall, deprived of offerings of rice and water. By these wrongs of the destroyers of the family, which bring about the mingling of castes, the eternal traditions of caste and family are torn down. We have heard, Janardana, that those whose family traditions are destroyed are doomed to dwell in hell for an unmeasured time. Alas, we have resolved to commit a great wrong, in that we are prepared to kill our own people out of greed for the pleasures of kingship. It would be better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me in battle, unarmed and unresisting.
Having spoken thus on the battlefield, Arjuna sank down onto the seat of his chariot, letting fall his bow and arrows, his mind overwhelmed with grief. Chapter 2, The Yoga of Discernment. To him who was thus overcome with compassion, his eyes troubled and filled with tears, sunk in sorrow, Madhusudana spoke these words.
From where has this dejection come upon you at this critical moment, Arjuna? It is unworthy of the noble, it does not lead to heaven, and it brings disgrace. Do not yield to weakness, Partha, it does not become you. Cast off this petty faintness of heart and rise up, scorcher of enemies.
How shall I strike Bhishma and Drona with arrows in battle, Madhusudana? They are worthy of reverence, destroyer of foes. It is better to live on alms in this world than to kill these great and honored teachers. For even should I kill them, though they be greedy of gain, the pleasures I enjoyed would be smeared with their blood. Nor do we know which is better for us, that we conquer them or that they conquer us. The sons of Dhritarashtra, having killed whom we would have no wish to live, stand arrayed before us. My very nature overcome by weakness born of pity, my mind bewildered as to duty, I ask you, tell me with certainty which is better. I am your pupil. Instruct me, for I have come to you for refuge. I see nothing that could dispel this grief which withers my senses. Even if I won a prosperous and unrivaled kingdom on earth, or even lordship over the gods.
Having spoken thus to Hrishiksha, Gyudiksha, scorcher of enemies, said to Govinda, I will not fight, and fell silent. To him, sitting dejected between the two armies, Hrishiksha, as if smiling, O descendant of Bharata, spoke these words.
You grieve for those who should not be grieved for, yet you speak words of wisdom. The wise grieve neither for the living nor for the dead. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor these kings, nor will there ever be a time when we shall cease to exist, all of us hereafter. Just as the embodied self passes in this body through childhood, youth, and old age, so too it passes into another body. One who is steady of mind is not troubled by this. The contacts of the senses with their objects, son of Kunti, give rise to cold and heat, pleasure and pain. They come and go and are impermanent, endure them, descendant of Bharata. The one whom these do not disturb, the one who is the same in pleasure and pain, the steady one, O bull among men, that one is fit for immortality. Of the unreal there is no being, of the real there is no non-being. The finality of both has been seen by those who perceive the truth. Know that to be indestructible by which all this is pervaded, no one is able to bring about the destruction of this imperishable thing. These bodies of the eternal, indestructible, immeasurable embodied self are said to come to an end. Therefore, fight, descendant of Bharata. One who thinks this self to be a slayer and one who thinks it slain both fail to understand. It does not slay, nor is it slain. It is never born, nor does it ever die, nor, having come to be, will it ever cease to be again. It is unborn, eternal, everlasting, and ancient. It is not slain when the body is slain. One who knows this self to be indestructible, eternal, unborn, and imperishable, how does that person cause anyone to be killed, Partha, or kill anyone? Just as a man casts off worn-out garments and takes other new ones, so the embodied self casts off worn-out bodies and enters others that are new. Weapons do not cut this self, fire does not burn it, water does not wet it, and wind does not dry it. This self cannot be cut, cannot be burned, cannot be wetted, and cannot be dried. It is eternal, all-pervading, unmoving, immovable, and everlasting. This self is said to be unmanifest, unthinkable, and unchangeable. Knowing it to be thus, you should not grieve. But even if you think of this self as constantly being born and constantly dying, still, mighty-armed, you should not grieve for it in this way. For death is certain for one who is born, and birth is certain for one who has died. Therefore you should not grieve over the unavoidable. Beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their middle state, and unmanifest again in their end, descendant of Bharata. What is there in this to lament? One person sees this self as a marvel, another speaks of it as a marvel, and another hears of it as a marvel. Yet even having heard of it, no one truly knows it. This self dwelling in the body is eternally beyond being killed, descendant of Bharata, in the body of every being. Therefore you should not grieve for any creature. Moreover, considering your own duty, you should not waver, for there is nothing better for a warrior than a battle fought in accordance with duty. Happy are the warriors, Partha, who obtain such a battle unsought, an open door to heaven. But if you will not fight this battle in accordance with duty, then, having abandoned your own duty and your honor, you will incur wrong. People will forever speak of your dishonor, and for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. The great warriors will think you withdrew from battle out of fear, and you will be held lightly by those who once thought highly of you. Your enemies will speak many unspeakable words about you, disparaging your strength. What could be more painful than that? Either you will be killed and attain heaven, or you will conquer and enjoy the earth. Therefore rise up, son of Kunti, resolved upon battle. Treating pleasure and pain, gain and loss, victory and defeat alike, engage in battle. Thus you will not incur wrong. This understanding has been declared to you according to Sankhya. Now hear it according to Yoga. Endowed with this understanding, Partha, you shall cast off the bondage of action. In this endeavor no effort is lost, nor is there any harm. Even a little of this dharma protects one from great fear. Here, joy of the Karush, the resolute understanding is single. The thoughts of the irresolute are many-branched and endless. The unwise utter this flowery speech, delighting in the letter of the Veda, saying there is nothing else, Partha. Their nature is desire, their goal is heaven. They proclaim rebirth as the fruit of action, and speak in many particular rites aimed at the attainment of enjoyment and power. For those whose minds are carried away by such words, who are attached to enjoyment and power, the resolute understanding is not established in deep contemplation. The Vedas have as their concern the three gunas. Be free from the three gunas, Arjuna, free from the pairs of opposites, ever grounded in truth, indifferent to gain and safekeeping, possessed of self. As much use as there is in a well when water is overflowing everywhere, so much use is there in all the Vedas for a knowing man of learning. Your right is to action alone, never to its fruits. Let not the fruits of action be your motive, and do not become attached to inaction. Perform action, Dhananjaya, established in yoga, abandoning attachment and remaining the same in success and failure. This evenness of mind is called yoga. Action performed alone, far inferior, Dhananjaya, is far beneath action joined with understanding. Seek refuge in this understanding. Pitiful are those whose motive is the fruit of action. One joined with understanding casts away, even in this life, both good deeds and bad. Therefore devote yourself to yoga. Yoga is skill in action. For the wise, joined with understanding, having abandoned the fruit born of action, freed from the bondage of birth, go to the place beyond affliction. When your understanding crosses beyond the thicket of delusion, then you will become indifferent to what has been heard and what is yet to be heard. When your understanding, confused by conflicting scriptural teachings, stands unmoving and steady in deep contemplation, then you will attain yoga.
What is the description of one whose understanding is steady, who is established in deep contemplation, Keshava? How does one of steady wisdom speak? How does he sit? How does he move?